Twist and shout. Breaking and entering, or B&E as Officer Hubble called it, was one thing, but B&E in the White Methodist Church of a small New England town was another, especially if the town was Stowe.
Technically, Chris said defensively, it was really just an E.
Officer Borite had to agree. There was really no break-in. There was little reason to lock a church if the poor box was emptied nightly. There was nothing worth stealing in most small-town churches. Just brass candlesticks, vases, worn hymnals, and pamphlets about the Lord and the church's various committees for dealing with church or spiritual upkeep. The church's only value lay in its simple elegance and its symbolic role in the community as a gathering place for the celebration of religious ritual. Pastor Albright never locked the minister's entrance to the Stowe Church, since it adjoined the rectory, and he was usually back and forth enough to keep an eye on his own house as well as the Lord's. He did, however, begin locking it after the break-in. From the pulpit the Sunday following, Pastor Albright described the event as an offense against God, the good people of Stowe, and the evening's peace. An irreligious incursion, he thundered. Some nodded seriously, and others fought back smiles. Chris, Jim, and Mike were not in the pews that Sunday, nor were they at 3 a.m. the Thursday before. They had entered the church quietly with a flashlight and a 7-inch square envelope just before 7:30 a.m., according to their easily obtained confessions and Officer Borite's handwritten report. Gaining entrance through the unlocked rectory door, they avoided the nave altogether. It made us feel uncomfortable, Chris later confessed. They went through the basement to the stairs that led up to the steeple and the electronic controls for the carillon. Mike had cased the location that afternoon and knew exactly where to go. The three had formed a rock and roll band in their junior year and performed songs they wrote, as well as hits of the prior decade by Carl Perkins, Alan Freed, Chuck Berry, and Little Richard. There was little point in competing with current hits, they agreed, as these tended to sound better on current recordings. Chris was an audio nut, to the extent that his late teen wallet would allow, and managed the recalcitrant collection of tube amps, lamp cord, and homemade plywood boxes with speakers inside that made up the band's PA system. Stowe's night-blooming après-ski haunts offered the band a few winter venues, and the three annual Stowe High School dances occasioned additional opportunities for assembling and performing. But summer performances were always free in a large meadow up in Sterling Valley, where a keg would be tapped and people would enjoy swimming, beer, and the highland meadow of an abandoned hill farm. Electronic carillons were an expensive luxury brought about by the advent of hi-fi technology. They didn't replace traditional carillons, as no church community or parish in Vermont could afford the luxury of real cast bells mounted in a steeple. The electronic carillon combined a Webcor 45 RPM record changer, a GE Telechron timer, four Bell Labs mono amplifiers, and four 36-inch Electro-Voice PA trumpets aimed at the four compass points from high in the steeple. These components were familiar to Chris, who, as his band's sound man, had grappled with worse. The technology could go unattended for a 7-day cycle. Seven 45 RPM singles containing Protestant hymns played on a real carillon were stacked on the changer Monday morning by the sexton, and the timer did the rest. At 4:50 p.m., the timer turned on the system to warm up, and at 5 p.m. sharp, the changer was engaged. A 45 RPM single dropped into position and played "A Mighty Fortress Is Our God," or "Onward Christian Soldiers," for the spiritual edification of the residents of Stowe, as well as those on the outskirts of town north and south on Route 100, and west up the mountain road to the ski lodges and base lodges on Mount Mansfield. The carillon's reach was a source of great pride to Pastor Albright and his Methodist flock, who had raised the money to install it.
A large anonymous donation believed to be from a notable in the Mount Mansfield company pushed the beleaguered fund drive over the top and secured the installation of the new electronic carillon. Chris's later confession indicated that the three entered the church about 2:15 a.m. The whole operation took a bit more time than they'd expected because of the complexity of setting the tiny teeth on the GE Telechron timer. This electromechanical innovation combined the features of an alarm clock and a simple electric switch. To set it, however, one had to remove tiny little trigger fingers that rotated with the time and place them precisely on the diurnal arc where one wanted the switch to turn on. The hours were measured in military time, so Vespers was set for 16:40. This flummoxed Chris until Jim helped him with the math and the placement of the little fingers for 4 a.m. Carefully, they removed the stack of devotional hymns and replaced them with an old scratchy copy of the Isley Brothers' Twist and Shout from Mike's collection. Chris boosted the volume potentiometers on the four bell amps from their regular setting of 4 on a scale of 10 to 8. They ran the flashlight beam over the hole and, convinced that they'd properly set the timer, walked back to the entrance and across the dewy lawn to Jim's waiting 53 Ford. From Stowe's postcard downtown, they drove up into Stowe Hollow, high above the town, to enjoy their prank with the 2 6-packs of now-warm beer acquired on Mike's new ID at the store in Morrisville that sold beer to anyone able to both walk and flash a card with type on it. They drove past the Lang Farm up towards the old dirt track road that led to the high meadow on the hill overlooking Stowe. It was a noted trysting spot for local teens, as one could see cars coming from any direction and keep an eye on the village without being seen. Mike opened 3 beers. The trio laughed, taking turns telling of their apprehensions during the operation. They speculated about all the things that might have gone wrong, but didn't, and how Officer Borright would react when he got the call. My mother's gonna know, said Jim in a more serious tone. She always knows. How could she, said Mike. There's 120 kids in this town could have done it. I don't know. She just knows, said Jim ruefully. But she won't turn me in, I don't think. Well, hey, what time is it? Mike held his watch up to the moonlight and squinted at the Timex dial. 9:45. They opened another round of beers and lay back on the grass to enjoy the warm summer night. There was no breeze and all town activity had long since ceased. An owl hooted far away towards the Worcester Range, which loomed large in the moonlight behind them. West beyond the town with its white Methodist spire, Mount Mansfield dominated the horizon. A faint light glittered intermittently from the octagon at the top. Time is it now? Oh, should be starting soon, said Chris. The three sat upright and stared at the white spire. The piece continued. Oh, we screwed up, said Chris. It's 9:45. Maybe it's late, said Mike. It was hard to see them little teeth things. I don't know. We must have missed something, said Jim. Let's go home. I'm beat. Me too, agreed Mike. I gotta work tomorrow. Probably just as well. Borite's still pissed off about the bonfire. The three got up at 1:30 the hour and began to walk slowly down the long hill to the Ford, whose blistered chrome glistened in the silvery moonlight. As they approached the car and Jim was fishing for his keys, a sudden 60-cycle hum pervaded the night air, followed shortly by the very loud scratching sound of a steel needle touching down on the unrecorded opening grooves of a scratchy single. The quiet air crackled with hiss and overamplified scratches. Crap! What did you turn that up to? Yelled Jim. His question was drowned out by the ascending bass and drum rhythm lead-in to the vocal that began, Shake it up, baby, twist and shout. Holy shit, that's loud, Chris yelled, as they ran back to the top of the hill to catch the action and listen. Come on, baby, twist and shout. roared into the crisp night air above Stowe. The first verse was almost completed before the first light went on in the rectory. Mike opened the rest of the beers, and the three stood in awe at the sheer volume emanating from the spire. Lights flickered on helter-skelter in town as the steeple launched into the second verse. Mike pointed out excitedly the steady line of lights going on up and down Route 100 towards Morrisville and Waterbury, respectively, and west up the mountain road toward the protruding A-frames, kitschy Tyrolean cottages, and getaway mansions of the wealthy urban immigrants recently settled in Stowe, if only for the winter months. A 45 RPM single was limited to about 2.5 minutes, especially when the song enjoyed the dynamic range of Twist and Shout. As the final verse roared through the valley and encountered the thunderous echo of an earlier measure bouncing back off Mount Mansfield, their glee gave way to nervous fear. The fear amplified as the yellowish house lights and roving car headlights became interspersed with blue revolving lights converging on the church. The prank had now gotten the full attention of Officer Borite and Tonto, as the kids called Deputy Hubble. Twist and Shout, however, had enjoyed a full play on the Methodist Carillon. Still stunned by the terrestrial coverage of the concert, the three ran for Jim's car. Mike suggested they drive south through the hollow and approach Stowe from the south. That way they could spend the night at Jim's house without passing through the thicket of cars and indignant town officials gathering downtown. They parked quietly behind Jim's mother's Plymouth and snuck quietly in through the kitchen door. The kitchen light was on and a strong smell of coffee was present. Alice padded in slowly in a bathrobe and slippers. "I know you did it," was all she said, sitting down at the kitchen table and stirring her coffee with a spoon. "You'd better get some rest before Borite comes for the three of you."
"Mom, what makes you so sure that he'll know it was us?" Jim said plaintively.
"Who else would dream this up? And who other than you, Chris, could jigger that bell ringer to do this? Think about it. Doesn't take a Sherlock Holmes to solve this case," she said, sipping her coffee.
The boys went down to the basement to some bunks that the family rented out to ski bums in peak season for $3 a night. They were too keyed up to sleep, however. The knock came at about 7:30. There was little need for any complicated rites protocol. The boys were simply led away after Borite gulped down the coffee Alice poured for him.
"This won't go too hard on him, will it?" Alice inquired.
"Well, it's up to Judge Terrell," said Borite without fanfare. "We'll see how this rock and roll stuff plays to his ear. It's the church part that's not going to go down well." As often happens in Vermont towns, the town split down the middle on the issue of retribution. The buzz ran the gamut from outrage to chortles. For several weeks, people speculated about appropriate punishments for the prank. Some thought the whole matter harmless, worthy only of community service, while others were ready to haul the stocks out of the Stowe Historical Society. Appropriately enough, Judge Terrell was somewhat in between, and wisely sensed the need to give a degree of satisfaction to both sides. For breaking and entering and malicious mischief, Chris, Jim, and Mike got 3 days in jail with credit for time served and 90 days worth of yard work for Pastor Albright. Satisfactory completion of this sentence would mean no blight on their record. Good news for the offenders, since all three aspired to either college or military service, neither of which looked kindly on a criminal record. The Isley Brothers' Twist and Shout became a best-selling single in Stowe and the surrounding towns, as well as a hit on local jukeboxes, where it often drew applause in local watering spots and eateries.